The big question, what will the Fed say about the economy?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good day to you from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Right now, we're going to ask that big question. On this day, the Federal Reserve meets to discuss the economy and interest rates. The central bank will look at whether there's anything left to be done to give a little juice to a very slow recovery. David Weiss is chief economist at S&P. He's with us live from New York this morning. Hi, David.
Hi, good morning.
All right. What's the Fed looking at as it pertains to policy decisions they may make? What are some of the numbers that they're looking at?
Well, the last 6 weeks, the numbers have been coming in a little bit better. It looks definitely like there's a recovery going on. It's just a very slow recovery. Housing starts this morning. We're just the latest example of numbers coming in a bit better than expectations.
And we'll talk about that in just a minute. What are the Fed's options, David? They can't take interest rates much lower. What else can they do?
And you can't lower interest rates below zero. Their option is quantitative easing, which means lowering other interest rates rather than just short-term by buying long-term government bonds, mortgage-backed paper, corporate bonds, and anything else they can find.
I want to ask you about this report that came out yesterday saying the recession ended in June of 2009. Is that a testament, do you think, to Fed policy of the past, or maybe just a bit of luck?
Well, probably some of both. It's mostly natural timing of the cycle. Eventually, recessions end because people have to start spending money again. Timing's about right. It always takes the NBER about a year to determine that the recession's over.
All right. David Weiss talking to us from S&P. David, thanks.
Thank you.
Got word this morning, as David mentioned just a little while ago, that planned home building, housing starts as we know it, rose more than expected in August. The Commerce Department says those housing starts increased to the highest level in 4 months. Let's do the numbers. Markets in Europe are up at the moment, anywhere from 0.5% to 1%. Ireland's debt agency says there was very strong demand in its sale of government bonds, so that's helping markets there. Wall Street yesterday, the Dow added nearly 145 points to close at 10,753. New York City's a very busy place. Last week, the well-dressed crowded Manhattan for Fashion Week, and now diplomats from around the world are in town for the UN General Assembly. And we wondered which gathering has a bigger economic impact on the city. Here's Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson.
The city doesn't keep track of how much money flows in when diplomats from 192 countries fly in for the UN meeting, but it does tabulate the receipts from Fashion Week. They add up to $385 million. Ansel Hawkins, who runs the Chambers Hotel in Midtown, says the two events are about the same in his book.
In hotel land, it's called Heads and Beds, so we're just as full now as we were then.
Which is not to say the economic impact is the same. He says the fashionistas are higher maintenance, but the diplomats have the old central bank credit card.
They seem to have more cash, or at least have access to more cash.
Not everyone is cheering the influx of visitors. Cab driver Jorge Mauri says he hasn't gotten a boost from Fashion Week or the UN meeting, but he sure is getting annoyed by the traffic from all those limo motorcades.
A lot of jams everywhere, and it's kind of difficult to move around.
In fact, the average daytime car speed in Manhattan during the General Assembly is 8 miles per hour. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Ally Bank, committed to customer service with the option to reach a human being at any time at 877-247-ALLY by pressing 0. By Constellation Energy, committed to customer choice and powering America's clean energy future through investments in nuclear, wind, solar, and efficiency technologies. And by Constant Contact Event Marketing, working to help small businesses and nonprofits make their events easier with event registration and marketing tools. ConstantContact.com.
You heard Jeremy Hobson just a little while ago talk about the UN General Assembly. Well, the United Nations has had a goal for nearly a decade to, among other things, help cut extreme poverty, part of its so-called Millennium Development Goals. And a recent report shows there's been some success. This week, world leaders will get an update on many of those goals as they meet there in New York. And they're hoping the global economic downturn hasn't derailed what they'd set out to do. From Johannesburg, reporter Gretchen Wilson has more.
In one corner of this inner city park, there are rows of raised garden beds. Mabule Mokine points to leafy green vegetables.
Of chard, spinach, and I see now because it's spring, there is strawberry. That is strawberry.
Mokine is with the Greenhouse Project, a nonprofit that teaches city dwellers how to grow food on their balconies and rooftops. Not because it's cool, because they're hungry.
the incidence of HIV and AIDS. It has left a number of households being run by children, you know.
The first Millennium Development Goal is to cut in half the number of people in extreme hunger and poverty by 2015. At this rate, most countries in Southern Africa aren't going to make it. José Koch is with the Regional Hunger and Vulnerability Program.
The commitment and the effort is there. It's just that the problem is so huge.
Still, countries around the world have made headway on the goals to provide basic education for all boys and girls alike, to curb the spread of HIV/AIDS, and to reduce child and maternal mortality rates. The summit buzz is about the billions of dollars needed to go further. But in the wake of the global financial crisis, the question is, who's going to pay for it?
The only way forward is to really make sure that trade does get more equal.
Many in Southern Africa say they don't want charity as much as they want investment, access to markets, and loans for their small businesses. This kind of economic development doesn't depend on donations, which can be squandered by dishonest governments. And though the UN doesn't have a big stick to force governments to meet the goals, citizens do. Nokotula Magudulela is with Amnesty International.
People can march, they can write petitions, they can litigate. People need to raise their voices at their local level.
That kind of leverage will be crucial in the next 5 years. As countries strive to achieve the Millennium Development Goals, the biggest coordinated effort in human history to reduce extreme poverty. In Johannesburg, I'm Gretchen Wilson for Marketplace.
And finally, the city of Columbia, South Carolina, wants to build a nice parking area in one of its neighborhoods. But there's a 4,000-square-foot building in the way. Rather than bulldoze the structure, the city says it'll give the building away to anyone who'll have it moved, to pay to have it moved. And that could cost a lot of money. Plus, you have to have a place to move it, right? Who knows? In some twist of fate, maybe there's a nice parking area the building can move to. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiatakis. This is the Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.